Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Myth of Mental Illness: Foundations of a Theory of Personal Conduct is Thomas S. Sass' influential 1961 critique of psychiatry, medical authority, and the language used to classify human suffering. Written by a psychiatrist trained in psychoanalysis, the book is not a clinical manual, but a work of philosophical, legal, and social criticism. Its central claim is that mental illness is not a literal disease in the same sense as bodily illness, but a metaphor applied to conduct, conflict, and distress. Sass argues that many psychiatric diagnoses name problems in living rather than identifiable biological pathologies. The book aims to separate medicine from moral judgment, voluntary help from coercion, and human agency from disease explanations. It became a defining text for critics of psychiatric power, civil libertarians, and scholars concerned with the ethics of involuntary treatment, while also provoking strong opposition from mainstream psychiatry and later biological approaches to mental disorder. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the distinction between bodily disease and problems in living. Sass builds the book around a sharp distinction between physical disease and what psychiatry calls mental illness. In his view, a disease properly refers to a demonstrable disorder of the body, such as tissue damage, infection, lesion, or other biological pathology. By contrast, many psychiatric labels describe patterns of speech, feeling, belief, or conduct that other people find disturbing, irrational, immoral, or inconvenient. This distinction matters because it changes the kind of explanation being offered. If a person has pneumonia, the illness is not a judgment about values or social behavior. If a person is labeled mentally ill because of unwanted conduct, Sass argues that the diagnosis often smuggles moral disapproval into medical language. He does not deny that people suffer, behave destructively, or seek help. His point is that suffering and conflict do not automatically become diseases. The phrase "problems in living" captures his alternative framing. Human difficulties may be painful, severe, and socially consequential, but they remain connected to choices, meanings, relationships, and values rather than to disease in the narrow medical sense. Secondly, psychiatric diagnosis is a form of labeling and social judgment. A major concern in the book is the way psychiatric terminology can transform contested behavior into apparent medical fact. Sass argues that diagnostic labels often carry the authority of science while resting on judgments about what counts as normal, rational, acceptable, or deviant. This does not mean every diagnosis is arbitrary in the same way, but it does mean that psychiatry can blur description and explanation. To call someone schizophrenic, neurotic, or disordered may describe how that person appears to others, yet the label can also imply an underlying disease without proving one. The social effect is powerful. Once a label is accepted, the person may be treated less as an agent and more as an object of management. Sass sees this as a linguistic problem with legal and moral consequences. Medical vocabulary can make coercion seem compassionate and can make disagreement appear pathological. The book, therefore, asks readers to examine not only whether psychiatric categories are useful, but also what they authorize other people and institutions to do. Personal Conduct, Responsibility, and the Rejection of Disease Excuses. The subtitle, Foundations of a Theory of Personal Conduct, points to the constructive side of the book. Sass wants conduct to be understood through reasons, purposes, conflicts, and responsibility, rather than through automatic disease causation. He objects to explanations that treat troubling behavior as if it were simply the product of an illness acting through a passive person. For him, human beings act within moral, social, and symbolic worlds. Their actions may be confused, self-defeating, desperate, or harmful, but they still belong to the domain of agency. This position has significant consequences for blame, excuse, therapy, and law. Sass worries that the concept of mental illness can remove responsibility from some people while giving experts power over them. At the same time, his argument does not require indifference towards suffering. Voluntary counseling, conversation, and practical assistance can still be meaningful. The issue is whether help is offered to a responsible person seeking assistance or imposed on someone recast as a patient whose choices are invalidated by diagnosis. Fourthly, the critique of involuntary psychiatry and the therapeutic state. One of the most enduring parts of the book is its challenge to involuntary psychiatric intervention. Sass argues that when the state authorizes psychiatrists to confine or treat people against their will, psychiatry moves beyond medicine and becomes an instrument of social control. He compares involuntary hospitalization less to ordinary medical care than to detention justified by medical language. The problem is not only confinement itself, but the erosion of ordinary legal protections. A person who has committed no crime may lose liberty because experts define the person as ill, dangerous, or incapable. Sass later used the idea of the therapeutic state to describe a political order in which medical and psychiatric concepts expand into law, morality, and governance. In this framework, treatment can become a socially acceptable name for coercion. The book, therefore, insists on a strict distinction between voluntary psychiatric relationships and coercive psychiatric power. Sass is not primarily arguing against people seeking help. He is arguing against the fusion of psychiatry with state authority. Lastly, influence, controversy, and the limits of the Sass argument, the myth of mental illness became a landmark because it forced psychiatry, law, and the public to confront questions that clinical language can obscure. It influenced civil liberties debates, critiques of institutional psychiatry, and later discussions about medicalization. Admirers value its clarity about coercion, its defense of consent, and its warning that medical labels can stigmatize as well as help. Yet the book remains controversial. Mainstream psychiatry rejects the broad claim that mental illness is merely a myth, especially in light of later research connecting many psychiatric conditions with genetics, neurobiology, trauma, development, and measurable impairment. Critics also argue that Sass defines disease too narrowly and gives insufficient weight to conditions in which judgment, perception, or self-control may be profoundly compromised. These criticisms do not erase the importance of the book, but they affect how it should be read. Its strongest contribution is ethical and conceptual, rather than empirical. It is most persuasive as a challenge to coercion, diagnostic overreach, and careless medical metaphor, and less persuasive when taken as a complete account of all mental disorder. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers interested in the foundations of psychiatry, the ethics of diagnosis, civil liberties, law and medicine, and the philosophy of human conduct. It is especially useful for psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, legal scholars, bioethicists, and students who want to understand why the language of mental health has been politically and morally contested. The main intellectual benefit is not a simple rejection of psychiatric care, but a sharper awareness of the difference between voluntary help and coercive authority, between disease explanation and moral judgment, and between compassion and control, compared with many books on psychiatry. The myth of mental illness stands out because it attacks the conceptual basis of the field rather than merely criticizing particular treatments or institutions. Sass writes from inside psychiatry while questioning its medical status, which gives the book an unusual tension and lasting historical importance. Readers should approach it critically, especially in light of modern neuroscience and clinical evidence, but its questions remain relevant wherever diagnosis affects liberty, responsibility, stigma, and consent. If you would like to support Thomas S. Sass, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.